The term quantum is most often used within the context of intricate and complex science, a revolutionary realization that reality, when viewed from a subatomic level, is not what science once thought it was, disconnected and linear. The findings, though exciting, may be dizzying in its complexity to the layperson. That's where Diane Collins comes in. In her thoughtful and inspiring book, Do You Quantum Think?, she takes the complicated and distills it down to usable nuggets that virtually anyone can understand. In writing this book, Diane was on a mission to convey the necessity to not only understand the dynamics of quantum reality, a reality that she feels we are in right now, but one that we must fully embody in order to realize our full potential. Listen in as Diane discusses her ideas about what this new age of thinking holds in store for us and its revolutionary implications. Diane, it seems that modern science is finally catching up to what the ancients have known for perhaps thousands of years, that there is an underlying reality that connects all things. In modern science parlance, it's called the quanta, or quantum, which is a subatomic reality where virtually nothing can be ultimately separated. We're talking about wave-particle duality, non-locality, and even multiple dimensions of existence that exist within the same so-called space. In your book, Do You Quantum Think?, which I love, you invite the reader to enter into this new level of understanding by virtue of how they think, how they process information. So today, I'd like us to discuss your idea of what quantum thinking is and why it's imperative that the masses begin to adopt this new way of thinking. But before we get into that, because I know this is a big subject, I'd like you to tell us why you felt so compelled to write this book at this time, although I do believe it was published a few years ago, still recent, but why now?
First, let me say thank you so much for having me in this conversation with you, Alexis. I'm just so pleased to be in dialogue with you and everyone listening. What happened for me is that I want to say this, that even though my book has been out for a few years, I've actually been presenting the quantum think, what I call a system of thinking, mm-hmm. new principles that are based in the blending of insights from new science, quantum science for short, merging with spiritual wisdom, as you just said, mm-hmm. and made, this is an important part for me, made practical and integrated in everyday modern popular culture.
Love it.
Because for me, why did I get into writing it, is that, first of all, I say quantum think chose me. I didn't choose it. I didn't wake up one day and say, I think I'm going to create a new system of thinking. But because of my quest, okay, well, let me just say, my mission was to have us as a humanity, as individuals, as a collective humanity, go from merely knowing the wisdom to actually living it, mm-hmm. to being the walking, talking embodiments of it. Because as I was growing up, I looked around and I thought, wait a minute. There's something wrong with this picture. There's a disconnect between all the scriptural wisdom, all the personal development wisdom, all the ways that we know, each of us inherently know how we should be, what we should do, what is the right thing, even for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And yet, I thought, well, if all you had to do, you know, as you think so you become, you run into that along the way in mind science, is change your thought to change your life, to change the world. Well, why isn't it happening? Mm-hmm. And so that's when I made my discovery.
I see.
That mm-hmm. it's a system, and the system is like a vortex, and we're in a quantum age. But our thinking system is still very much dominated by the industrial age version of the nature of reality.
Absolutely.
And how it works. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it, just to complete on this part of it, is that if you know that the overarching assumptions of the worldview, very simple, what we believe to be true about the nature of reality, how it works, what's possible, what's not, and our role in it. If we're in an entirely different version of the nature of reality that's come about in the last 100 years, and we're still thinking in an outdated version of reality, the universe as machine, the industrial age, still a genius, but a very limited, one-dimensional, only physical matter is real, then you realize, oh, no wonder we're a little bit, you know, discombobulated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You could even call it a bit of cognitive dissonance going on in our process.
There is cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because within ourselves, we know, and I know you talk about this in many different ways in your conscious musings, in the way that you teach about intuition and consciousness. And it's like, it's in here. When we talk about these subjects, mm-hmm. we connect to it immediately. Why? You know, like in Do You Quantum Thing, I say, this isn't like I know something and you don't. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. We're each one of us an aspect, an expression of the infinite possibility, of the infinite intelligence, of what you refer to. I know you like the word universe, so do I. So we're all each connected into this mind field. That's the new science that they said, wait a minute, the universe isn't like a giant machine, it's more like a giant mind. Well, maybe in some dimensions it is like a machine. But mm-hmm. when you look at it, it's like, what's creating reality? Mm-hmm. Consciousness, mm-hmm. the way our habits of thinking it are. But what I was saying, though, Alexis, is that when we discuss these topics with one another, we connect into it. I call it the art of distinguishing, bringing something into your awareness right now in the present moment in such a way that you connect to it and you know it as you. And what is intuition? That's what it is. It's connecting to that infinite intelligent mind field. And there are specific operating principles that it's time for us to connect into, to learn. These are divinely given by human birthright faculties of mind, what I call the natural faculties of mind, that we never learned in traditional education, because the traditional education system is based on the physical only as real, five sensory.
That's right.
Dimension.
That's right. Well, you know, like many, including myself, you, as we can see, have been very vocal about the idea that we're living during this unprecedented time in history, Diane, that we're in the midst of a shift. That's the buzzword now, a shift on our planet, an energetic shift, perhaps. And so our consciousness must shift and evolve along with it. I happen to think that if we don't soon rise to the occasion, there may be some big consequences. You feel that the idea of the quantum way of thinking will be integral in going with this shift, right?
That's exactly right. And it is. So what, you know, we're each a vehicle of our own unique wisdom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like to say the great paradox of being human is we're universally the same. We all want the same things, great relationships, self-expression, you know, a prosperous existence, abundant happiness, all the good stuff. And we're individually unique. So one of the things that happens, I think, in a great shift is that it's like what you're saying. It's time for us to consciously get in touch with, wait a minute, we're the ones bringing it about. Mm-hmm. It's emerging around us, and we're the ones bringing it about. So what is the central dynamic of creation that we've been born with? The power of intent. That's one of the mind faculties. So it's like choosing an intent to consciously evolve, to consciously master the way that we are here to be as co-creators, as collaborators. And especially in this shifting change, what I was going to say is that why is it so important for quantum thinking? Is that if you want to connect to your own wisdom, then you need to be able to clear the energy field that you are traveling in. This is your own resonant state. I call, let me just say, the five natural faculties of mind: intent, intuition, subtle energy, resonance, and meditation, which I consider an actual faculty of mind, not just a practice. Practices mm-hmm. are important. However, so when you see these faculties of mind and how they work together, it's like, well, wait a minute, in the great shift, well, who am I in this matter? And you realize, okay, well, wait a minute, you were given talents and gifts mm-hmm. and proclivities and experiences. And now it's like I say, your job on the planet is to give them.
Absolutely.
And so to give what, and I feel it's so important for each of us, and this is one of the great satisfactions of life, what we call, you know, connecting to our own purpose, feeling like we're living our purpose, feeling like we're making that kind of contribution, not to sound trite or, you know, it's not trivial. It's not cliche. Mm-hmm. But it's that if we understand these faculties of mind, if we connect into them, if we learn how to use our intuition properly to connect into the non, what's called in science, the non-local mind
field.
That's
right. Mm-hmm.
That, oh, we'll be hearing, we'll mm-hmm. be getting the intel mm-hmm. from the surrounding mind, energy, spirit, conscious field.
Mm-hmm.
That is meant for us. And in order for that, we have to know the principles, which quantum think outlines 21 specific principles and practices.
Done beautifully,
the mind
by the
and
way.
Awareness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it trains us in all those five faculties of mind through these principles that are based in science and spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And that so I thought, let me just put it all together, you know, let's not wait till the next century. As you say, there are consequences if we don't act now proactively with a willful intent,
mm-hmm.
with a consciously aware intent. So I thought, let me put it all together, make it easy for people, make it entertaining. I like entertainment, so I try to make it entertaining. And then, okay, now, let's start to live in this more expanded and up-to-date world view,
right,
where we are connected through invisible field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, go ahead.
No, I was just, you're hitting so many great points. I want to comment about the book. As I said, I haven't read the entire book as yet, but as soon as I did begin to read it, Diane, I thought it was so engaging and in some cases indeed humorous. And I think that's so important when you're trying to draw the non-scientific reader into a subject like this, which is very scientific. We're going to get more into the crux of what quantum think is, of course. So it's definitely relatable. I have to ask you before we get deeper into the subject, is this your typical writing style, or did you also sense a need to reach out in a very human, down-to-earth way to be able to have the masses get it?
Well, I think that, you know, I tell this story about meeting Isaac Deshava Singer in Do You Quantum Think, who was a Nobel laureate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you got to that part. The book is actually meant to be read very slowly, and I call it A Friend for Life. And, you know, I was trying to write romance novels earlier, in an earlier evolution
wow.
of my life as a human being, to make so I could be independent and make money. And I thought, oh, I can write. I'll write these little, you know, the soft romance. But I couldn't do it. So in a state of delirium, one day I called up. I thought, oh, Isaac Deshava Singer. I live in Miami Beach. He lives in New York, but he has a place here. I'll call him up. He was 82 years old, Polish-American, and with a thick British accent, a genius guy, won every award, you know, the 25-year New York Times Golden whatever award, in everything in literature, wrote mostly fiction, a writer, and I thought, let me call him up. You know, like, really? It was one of
love
my
it.
Bold and audacious moves. So I called him up. I go, Isaac, you don't know me, but I have to talk to you. And I was trying to write this novel, and I'm having such a hard time. And anyway, we met for coffee, and he said to me, among other brilliant things, he said, in order to write junk, you've got to have a junky soul. Now, he didn't mean that that was junk. He quickly said, you know, disclaimer, I don't mean that, but he was very, you know, that's how his writing was, like, really powerful, you know. And I realized, you know, when you ask about, was that your style, or did I try to put that in to reach the masses? I mean, I do have a certain strategy in wanting to connect to people, but, you know, in the most loving, compassionate way.
Which
but
you
I
did.
I also realize that's me. It's like I've got that maverick style. It's mm-hmm. like the whole part one of the book, which is called Part One, Wake Up, and Part Two is Live the Wisdom. Part one is like, okay, well, why should we quantum think? Okay, you want me to quantum think? Tell me why I should. And that's my personality.
Uh-huh.
So it is natural to me.
Yeah.
And I think part of it, Alexis, is to really connect to that in us where you can be fully self-expressed because, you know, it's kind of revealing. And I've heard you on your shows where, you know, it becomes very candid and you reveal things.
Mm-hmm.
But that is your authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we all want, is each other's authenticity, I think.
So
what
I think in the way you wrote the book, Diane, and the way you're explaining it right now is so in alignment with the point you're trying to make in the book itself, that we have to live, yes, we hear that cliche, live in the present moment. It's true, although we all hear it all the time. But living authentically, making your own voice heard, although we are part of this, what we call continuum of consciousness, that we are all one, we're individual, and it is in, we may be trying to convey a similar message, or we may want the same things, but it is in our spirit to convey them with a uniqueness and a twist that only we can do. So I'm glad I asked that question because it really is directly related to how you were so successful in writing this book, because you're quantum thinking.
Exactly.
And on that,
I can't help myself.
You
now,
can't help
it doesn't
yourself.
Mean, you know, when somebody said, and I remember once a travel agent, and she said to me, I said, okay, here's what I want for this trip. And she goes, oh, no, you'll never get that. I said, if you're working with me, you can never say, don't, you'll never get that, because it's an infinite possibility. This is what I mean, the difference between knowing the wisdom and living it.
Yeah.
I said to her, look, Robin, it's an infinite possibility universe. There must be another way that we can have this happen. And, of course, there was. So it's not like I'm pushing. So let's just look. I just want to say something about a very important characteristic of what I lovingly call the old worldview that gave rise to the industrial age, the age of machines, and the new worldview, the quantum age. And so quantum thinking is not about science. It's about how the discoveries of science, the assumptions of science, have shaped the way we think. Why? Because, as every spiritual tradition has said, as you think, so you become.
Mm-hmm.
The Buddha said that all you are is a result of what you have thought. So the thing about it is, when you look at how did the old worldview shape with the way we think? Now, here's a really important part about, you know, well, why does it seem like we have these, like, negative thoughts, or what I call wretched self syndrome? It's got to go, you know, the I'm not good enough, I don't know if I can, or they're not good enough thoughts, whatever, the government, the corporations, the terrorists, you know, whatever we have going on. But on the other hand, we're all saying, oh, but unconditional love and compassion. So this is what I'm talking about, Kit. I'm not saying absolve everyone of responsibility, but to look deeper into the situation. So just on a very practical level, the old world view, mechanical, think about a machine. Mm-hmm. I think, what if there's actually nothing wrong with us, but that at that point in human evolution, in the evolution of consciousness and us as a humanity, that in many ways we became automatic and mechanical too. When you look at how did that shape our thinking, it taught us that, first of all, there's only one dimension. So even though we know that there's spirit, there's soul, and whatever, we're still focused on, oh, what do we learn in school? About the brain. We're not learning about intent, intuition, and so forth. What happens in society? Oh, in the physical dimension, we look different. We look separate. Now, from a quantum thing perspective, there are distinctions, but no actual separation.
That's right.
You don't have to know science to know this, is that we're breathing in, right, oxygen, we're breathing out carbon dioxide, the plants are giving us our breath, we're breathing out, we're eating, the chlorophyll-based, plant-based things, even if you eat it by way of a third-party animal or however it happens. Mm-hmm. But we're in continuous exchange, even on a physical basis, with everything. But because we're not taught to relate to that part of life which is invisible, to thought as a creative substance, to consciousness as a creative substance, to the exchange that we are between ourselves, what I refer to as relational field, all these things. But what are we? What have we been conditioned to? Analysis. So you think, well, I had a bad thought that I don't think I can ever be a public figure. Let's say that. I have a message to get out, but I don't think if I have the confidence or the secure within myself to do it. Now, that is just a thought, what I call a least action pathway thought, the least creative action, meaning the most mechanical action. Because when you look at, and then we go into analysis, right? So the old worldview, machine, once you set it up to run, it runs on its own unless something goes wrong. Then you look at it. But otherwise, it's just automatic. And because we exist in fields, and it's mind fields, so that I say most of the thoughts we have aren't even ours. They're just visiting. So let them go by like a bird past the window, as
visiting.
I like to say.
I love it.
But you see, when you look at this and you start saying, I had a bad thought about myself. Why did I have that thought? Now we go into analysis. What happened to me when I was 3 years old? Maybe it was my nursery school teacher. And, you know, you go into this, and then when you begin to make this distinction in the system from which you think, in the framework from which you think, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's a different framework based in a different set of realities about the nature of reality. I know you talked about that. And then you realize, well, wait a minute. It's just a thought. And that the most important for me, the most important principle of a quantum worldview is that there are no absolutes. See, the old machine view is it was a universe of fixed and solid objects.
Absolutely.
In order to get something to move, you had a push or pull. It's
That's
a
right.
world of force and manipulation. It's like in corporate culture, you may know this, they call it command and control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole militaristic idea, not that the military is, you know, military is fine. I'm just talking about how it's shaped the way we are as people, the way we relate to life. So when you're able to distinguish this, wait a minute. Well, how do I get something to happen from a quantum worldview? Okay, no absolutes. I'm not talking about God, whatever you think of as source, creator, divine. I'm talking about an everyday human life, practical life. What's the nature of reality?
Mm-hmm.
It's an energy in flux informed by intelligence.
Absolutely.
There's nothing fixed.
Nothing fixed.
So you look at, okay, then just because I have a thought does not make it an absolute truth. It just because I have a thought doesn't even make it my own, because I'm floating around, right, in this minefield, and I'm picking up intel that, let me just distinguish between a thought that I originate, this is one of the practices that I like to share, and one that just visits, mm-hmm. because that one distinction could alter your life forever.
Absolutely.
So when you say, you create your reality, really? In what way do we create reality? Well, maybe we didn't create the moon and the earth and the cosmos. Maybe we did. That's another conversation, right? But mm-hmm. let's just say you do create your experience of reality. So there are circumstances, and then there's how you're related to the circumstances, how you think about them.
Mm-hmm.
That is where we have absolute jurisdiction. That's where our power lies in creating reality.
Right,
but you
right.
can only create when you awaken yourself to your automatic habits, interrupt those least action pathways, and start to use the principles we've been born with, the principle
right.
of intent.
And if I can just interject, because I want to read something to you from your book that relates totally in terms of jurisdiction, or allocating that jurisdiction outside of yourself. Let me do something, Diane. I want to read something. I have this habit. What I like to do when I'm looking at a book and I'm not able to read the whole book is I'll open up to an arbitrary page to see if there's something important that I can kind of tune into. And so I did that with your book, a so-called random page, and my eyes were immediately drawn to this passage that I'd like to read to our audience, and then we can continue down this road because I think you're making important points. Here's what it says. It says, old worldview thinking has conditioned us as a culture to wait for the, quote, leader. We imagine they are going to do it. A new worldview calls upon every one of us to express our leadership in whatever we bring to the game. The HOLO movement of purpose can be distinguished for a country, a company, for an organization, a community, for a family, for an individual. When your brand is in sync with the deeper underlying purpose of your company, you strengthen your resolve and your results. Bringing conscious awareness of the distinctive purpose of any entity grants focus and verve to a common endeavor. You are a connecting point, an access point into infinite intelligence. You are integral to the whole. I love that.
Great. You know, I do that. I do that too, and I do it. I always do it before I go on a show, and I do it a lot anyway with my husband, Alan Collins, who I like to say is my partner. In everything in life.
Yes.
He's the master quantum thing coach and consultant, and so we always read Do You Quantum Think? Because I think, really? Did I write that? But, you know, because we have to be reminded.
Yeah.
So even though I come from that context, it's like you read it, it's like, yeah, it puts it into your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was a very important passage that, anyway, so I was saying I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And that, you know what's interesting is that when you do that, and you called it random,
quote, random.
Well, when you,
quote.
When you, right, quote, I know you know it's not random, but I mean, it's random and it's not random, right? Wave particle duality.
There you go.
There
you go.
And so, but what happens is, and this is what I find so astounding. I mean, this is, you want to talk about awesome with a capital A. Is that this non-local mind, as the scientists call it, is that it's beyond time. Why is it called non-local? It means that, you know, mind is not, as I'm using it, the left brain, you know, analysis to, you know, cognitive click, click, click. It means whatever we hold in awareness. It means our individualized aspect of the all-pervasive infinite mind,
mm-hmm.
that where it becomes, you know, localized, but the reason what they call non-local mind, which is important for what you were just talking about, is that the mind is not, it doesn't have a spatial or temporal quality as an ordinary object, the telephone on my desk. So this is, you know, the mind, that's what I mean, that it means two things. It's not located in the sense of physical or chronological time. And it also means that it's not local to ourselves, meaning the mind, and this is why that works, can connect to anything. It's like if you use the analogy or the metaphor of the internet. The internet is the infinite mind, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the sublime of humanity. And you say, well, where is it located? Well, it's not located. Mm-hmm. It's transmitted, right? Excuse me. It's connected to. And it's like, well, what reality are you going to connect into wherever you, you know, click your finger or your mouse? So it's like that. It's like when you're using your intuition, your intuitive faculty, that non-local mind intelligence clicks in. It's like there. That's one of the principles in quantum thing, mm-hmm. intuition and non-locality.
That's right. Absolutely.
Intuition is the human access to the non-local mind intelligent field. And it, so it means like it's not like you go somewhere. It's like you connect in. So why are we able to all of a sudden get a message, you know, don't take this highway, take the local streets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where does it come from? The intuition is in gear all the time. The difference is when you're quantum thinking, you're using it consciously as a way of life because it's very, very important. So what you just read about, that's a chapter from the Holo Movement of Purpose, mm-hmm. which means where you can distinguish, well, what is my purpose? In Holo Movement, it was a word coined by the late, great quantum physicist, David Bohm.
David Bohm, of course. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Of course.
You understand. So what he said is you started, you know, as you started the show, is that everything is interconnected,
mm-hmm.
but we don't always see how. What he said is because there was this continuous, what he called holo movement.
That's right.
Hole, where things unfolded into what we do see right now and enfolded, hidden back into the fabric of reality.
The implicate order. That's right.
Yeah,
the implicate
exactly.
and explicate. Absolutely.
But it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It doesn't vanish. It just goes out of view, as you say.
It goes back into the wave, I believe. It goes back into the wave. The particle is really just sort of the manifestation on this third dimension. But the wave is infinite and infinitely and non-locally connected to what will unfurl, if you will, into the explicate. I know exactly. In fact, there's a quote that I've used probably a million times of David Bohm's, who what I love is he uses the analogy of whirlpools in a stream. When we talk about the paradox of the collective and the individual, he says, we as individuals are like whirlpools in a stream. When you look at whirlpools forming in a body of water, you can see the identity of those whirlpools, but you can't tell where the whirlpool begins and the stream ends. We have identity, we just don't have distinct borders, which is also a very holographic idea. Well, you know, speaking of which, I want to, because there's so much, I wish we had 2 hours, but we only have one, and there's so much I want to talk about, Diane. I want to mention a quote. You have so many great quotes, perennial quotes in your book, one of which is by Kabir, I believe I'm pronouncing it right, which I love. Mm-hmm. That says, kind of in David Bohm parlance, it says, most know the drop is in the ocean, but most do not know the ocean is also in the drop. Similar to what William Blake said, the universe is in a grain of sand. These are very holographic ideas and their implications. So I guess, and I think we're already there, but I wanted to ask you, what do you think the connection is, in your estimation, between the holographic model of reality and the quantum reality? Are they one and the same?
One and the same because when we talk about quantum, right? The big buzzword now.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad it is the buzzword, but it's, you know, quantum this, quantum that. You know, what I look at it as, it's sort of a wrap-up word that indicates the principles of this knowledge of reality that at the edge of what we know today, because things, who knows, you know, this may not be the end-all, be-all ever. Everything is evolving. Mm-hmm. So when you look at, you know, is a holographic and the quantum the same? Yeah, because, and that's the very first principle in the quantum thing system, holographic and holistic. And then what we're talking about is that then you start to see, well, how do those principles fit in my life? So when you look at your life being holographic, and you realize that, what does that mean? That the whole is contained in every smaller aspect of itself. And so when you look at your life as one whole, see, the old world view was a compartmentalized view. It's called reductionistic. I'm mm-hmm. sure you know that. Mm-hmm. Reduce reality to its constituent parts, figure out what they're made of and how it works, and then, you know, in a cause and effect way. And so the dynamic was cause and effect. It caused us to compartmentalize life. That's how we think of it, the either or, personal and professional, spiritual and material, liberal and conservative, black and white, you know, all these things. We don't realize that's only one, dimension. It's mm-hmm. a very limited way that it's trained our thinking. Because when you look at your life and people say, well, you know, I used to be a nurse, but, you know, now I'm an architect. And I don't know, how was I ever, I picked two big professions, so it's not a good example. But, you know, it's like whatever you did earlier in your life, or I had three different wives or husbands or boyfriends, and you don't realize the drop, the ocean is in the drop. So what does it mean, this holographic or the whole movement? It all ties together. When you look at it practically in your life, as you say, I say it like this, imagine your life as one whole story, like a well-written screenplay or novel. There's nothing in it that doesn't belong. And there's nothing in it that's left out. Of course, the difference is our life is still going on, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But you look at it, and when you start to make the connection, see, the quantum, what does it mean? It means life is holistic and holographic. Everything affects everything else. That's holistic. The whole is in every part. It means that it's an energy in flux. You know, 21 principles, I won't go all through them. But you look, the important thing is there are quantum effects, field effects. So you don't have to, it's not a cause and effect direct linkage. It's a field effect. When you open the book with an intent to get the perfect message for yourself in that moment for all of us, you are creating, you're generating a field effect. It's not a cause and effect logical, let me look up in the index, you know, the right topic right now. The non-local mind intelligence will take you directly to what message you needed in that moment. Mm-hmm. So when you look at this holographic, you say, well, wait a minute, if I look at my life as one whole story, and then the other quantum prince, you know, it's one of the ways that nature works is in patterns of relationship.
That's right.
And so you look at, you start to look at the patterns in your life, and you can then start to see, well, you know what, Alexis, when you were 5 years old, when you were 10 years old, there was something in you, I'm sure, you could tell us if you want to. What a reveal.
I know, right?
That where you were always had a very strong voice, not only physically, which you do have a very strong resonant, you know, voice that connects, you know, on the physical vibrational level, but also the voice, meaning your spirit or your ability to see the big picture and have people connect to it. But do you remember when you were younger that there was always that being expressed?
Mm-hmm. Without question. Didn't have to think about that too much. I understand where you're going with that, Diane, and I would have to say yes, that at least certainly in a figurative sense, in terms of the booming, I don't know that I have a booming voice, but the strong voice, that kind of works its way out as you get older. But in terms of the message that I've been articulating, although I think it was in context with the age that I was in, I'm thinking of a situation right now where I was probably, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old, very briefly, where I had a friend who would wear a little childhood friend who was a devious little thing. And, you know, she loved to get into mischief. And she used to wear a T-shirt, Diane, that said, "The devil made me do it." I will never forget this.
Oh, my God.
A T-shirt. Why her parents would even allow her to wear something like that at that age, I don't know. But, do you know, and let's see if I can see where you're going here. And I remember something, she was wearing that T-shirt and something had happened, and I think we got into a little scuffle. Now, mind you, we're 10, 11, maybe 12 years old, probably about 11. And she got mad at me for some reason. And I remember saying to her, Chrissy was her name. I said, Chrissy, at the time, I said, "Jesus forgives. Why can't you?"
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Do you know that popped into my mind the moment you said that? Now, if that is, I don't know whether that's directly indicative or not of me now or you know, or what the point you're making. But I think that, you know, there are no isolated chapters in our life, that
exactly.
our life is literally one, and we call it synchronicity. When you can see the coalescing, and sometimes you won't really know that it's a synchronicity until many years later, which I talk about a lot. So yes, I gotcha.
Yes,
I
you
know
can,
what you're talking
you
about.
See, if you read that chapter, I'm promoting people to read it.
Yes,
it's a very
I want
important
everyone.
Chapter
yes.
where you distinguish, it's the clues to your purpose.
That's right.
Then, you know, you don't have to wait to see it. That's the idea, I think. You and I were talking about that off air before, where, and yes, that is the point I was making, is you start to see these connections.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, wow, oh, that's my gift. Okay, what's the next expression of my gift?
That's right.
What's the new expression of my gift?
That's powerful.
What's the next evolution of it? Because what happens is what I call the art of distinguishing, a new worldview of learning. I mentioned it before. To bring something into your awareness in such a way that you have a new relationship with it, a stronger one. So when you distinguish something in the present moment, what you're doing is you're giving yourself an experience of it. That's the idea of do you quantum thing, is you connect experientially to your own awareness as you read. So if somebody reads, I think somebody gave me one review I didn't like on Amazon. Mostly good, though.
We don't like those.
We don't like those. But I think, well, you know, we don't like it, our identity. But I, you know, I get it. It's like somebody read, if you read it as information, you know, and that's really a vestige also of the old worldview conditioning, is we're looking to, you know, we hear something or we read something or listen to something, and we're like, the mind will automatically try to compare it to what you think you already know, or you will, if you read it as information, then it's conceptual. That was the old worldview, separation consciousness, you know, why do you see, like politicians, for example, it's a good illustration, where they're all, you know, God-fearing, you know, they love their space.
Mm-hmm.
But then they are, in behavior, they couldn't be nastier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you think, well, how does that happen? Because that faith, that connecting to spirituality becomes conceptual. It's like dry as a bone. It's not integrated in the aliveness that is you. So once you can wake up to that, I'm not saying anything wrong with anybody. I look at it as there are those of us awakening and realizing it, and there are those of us awakening and not realizing it quite yet.
Absolutely.
So, you know, where you can take this into your own hands. And so when you read, you could do this with any book, but my book particularly has this intent. It has an intention for this, where when you bring something into your awareness, right now we're making these various distinctions, and what happens is you give yourself an experiential awareness, and it's in our experience where we learn. We're not just learn, where the learning becomes integrated. So that's the idea, is when you can listen, whatever you're listening to, this could shift everything, you know, that we're all learning, is you have an intent to listen, is one of the practices in quantum thing, is to listen from not knowing. You have to do this as a conscious act, because for survival, we always listen from knowing what we know, what we've experienced, what we ever have known. But to be fresh in that moment, in this moment, is to consciously say, let me listen. It's all quiet. It's instantaneous. It's quantum leap style. Quantum leap is instantaneous. There's no pathway. There's no time involved. And you say, let me listen from not knowing. And then what happens is you literally open the floodgates, so to speak, of the quantum field.
I love it.
Of intelligence. And then when you're with another person, when you're thinking about the future of your life, when you're wanting, you know, when you're listening to a show or whatever, reading something, you have a completely different experience, because what you're doing is you're awakening your own awareness in that moment, so that you're not stuck with whatever the least action pathway conditioning, or what I call it, blame it on the old worldview, you know? It's nothing personal. It's a cultural phase of evolution that we're now poised to take a literal quantum leap in consciousness.
I love
start
it.
To, start to think and live and view life from these more up-to-date principles.
Right. I love what you said, Diane. That's powerful. Listen, that's worth reiterating. Listen from a place of not knowing. Now, to the audience, that may sound a little obvious, maybe even a little counterintuitive at first blush, but I don't think it is. It's a very subtle and yet profound piece of advice, and it is very quantum in its approach. I mean, think about that. We only have a few minutes. We're winding down, but I think it's worth elaborating on. That's what really stood out for me, because, you know, I as both of us do, we're interacting with people of all walks of life all the time, and I've noticed a trend, Diane, with people not really listening at all. They're too anxious to talk. We live in a very, I've got to get my thought out society. I think opining is encouraged with the advent of technology. And I that hurts me. That's a very, you know, as much as I love to talk, my mother used to say to me, Alexis, if you're talking all the time, how are you going to learn anything? Listening is the art. You've taken it a step further by saying, not just listening for the sake of, I just want to, you know, with an expectation, because I think a lot of people do listen with an expectation, but listen from a place of not knowing. That's that quantum leap I think you're talking about. I mean, there are other things, little nuggets in there that you brought up, but I think that's a shift of focus, and it can ignite just a whole cornucopia of solution to whatever it is you're listening to. Too.
That's exactly right, because what happens is, you know, remember, we're conditioned to relate to what's physical, including hearing words, you know, the words, the sounds are physical, you could say. But when you listen from not knowing, so we're not accustomed to relating to the field as a way of life, the invisible energy, intelligent, conscious field. Quantum field, let's call it for short. But we're always relating in fields. So what happens is when you listen from not knowing, and it's, again, you have to do it consciously. It's not a natural, you know, it can become natural, but it's right now we have to do it. And what happens is you're consciously interacting with the field of intelligence, because when you and I are in this conversation right now, and I think that there's one of the principles in quantum think is called being in one conversation. You look at it, well, the old worldview of separation and compartmentalization, speaking and listening, it looks, you know, that's how we're conditioned. Hurry up and finish so I can get my point in.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
and
right.
And so when you have this distinction, being in one conversation, which is like another octave of the very fundamental holistic and holographic principle. Look, it's a conversation is one whole. It's not in parts. And so when you start to relate to the conversation, is that each of us are voices in the one conversation. The conversation is its own dynamic, pulsating, alive presence. And the listening is just as important as the two of us who are speaking. Now, even though it's invisible to us right now, the listening is shaping the conversation that you and I are having.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're listening from not knowing, what happens is, again, the other person, you know, and this is all, you know, subtle. It's all invisible. It's not, it's in the, you know, sort of in the background, but it's there, it's present, is that if someone's listening, and I call it in that distinction, listening with your whole being, not just parroting back, you know, the physical sounds, but actually being as if the person speaking is you. What does it mean that we're unified consciousness? You know, this is actually living it. It's saying, mm-hmm. Okay, that's me. I'm speaking now. And because we're in this one conversation together, and what happens is, if someone's waiting to get their two cents in, and, you know, I'm not perfect at this. That's why I have to read my own book. I'm not kidding. I really mean that. It's like, because we're just, you know, we're becoming, we want to master this. But it's like, if somebody's listening, you know, if you feel like I have to hurry up and talk because the other person can't wait to get the thing in, you know, then it affects the energy field.
No question.
It affects the other person. It's all in the silent, but it's in the relational field. And conversely, when you're listening with your whole being, when you're consciously listening from not knowing, when you're just totally being with that person is now relaxed and free to express, and they experience that. And what happens is a solution, like you and I could get together and we have a dilemma. Like this happens in, let's say, in a business meeting, anywhere in a family.
Mm-hmm.
And in the quantum worldview, you realize, you know, they say you can 96% of the world is dark matter and dark energy. Like, the scientists know it exists, but they can only see 4%. I use 10 for convenience.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can only see 10% of reality, of what is there for you, I think I saw in one of your blogs that you wrote about this,
mm-hmm.
like the, you know, it's like the iceberg, but that there is this other 90% waiting to unfold. So you get together and say, we have this dilemma. We don't see the answer to it at the outset. But if we engage in a conscious, creative dialogue, Alexis, you and I can access that non-local field of intelligence, that mind field that we're all swimming in, that invisible, infinitely intelligent field. And we, because of our intent, however we express, you know, we're not doing it right now, but let's say we had that intent,
mm-hmm.
to find an answer, a solution, or maybe many solutions, that it will arise much more easily, much more rapidly.
Right.
When we're listening that way.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Oh my gosh. This is, you know, do you quantum think, people? do you quantum think? I am making a suggestion. I am going to back Diane 110%. I think it's time. I really, really do think it's time to, and I want to make this last point before we close out, because it's, I was watching a couple of your presentations, which are short and sweet, but they pack a wallop. Here's one that I want to bring up that really got my attention. You know, I've heard you say, I think you put the question out to people. So do you want to catch up to the quantum age? And then you say something like, well, I've got news for you. You can't. You cannot catch up. I love this. You've got to listen to this, folks. She says, you can't catch up to the quantum reality, but you can actually make a leap so that you can get into the center of it. And I think I picked up immediately what you were saying. I found that statement interesting because this in and of itself is a very quantum-like idea, that we will need to embody the quantum reality itself, which is faster than the speed of light. You know, when you think of catching up to something, you're assuming that there's space between you and that something. Think about when you're trying to catch up to the person, you're running a race and the person's in first place and you're in last, and you see the space between that person and you. That's catching up. But what I think what you're saying, Diane, is in a quantum reality, in order to be in the midst of it, you literally do not move from here to there in a spatial process. You literally put yourself, open up that world, put yourself in the center.
Oh, that is so well said. I love that graphic illustration that you gave. I was like,
well, you prompted
never,
it.
You know, with the race, that the person's in front of you. Because here's the thing. Think of it this way.
Mm-hmm.
The old worldview is one-dimensional, linear, time only moves in one direction. The new worldview, the quantum world, is it's multidimensional.
That's
right. It's a field effect. You can instantaneously grasp information because what you're doing is you're connecting. So what I'm saying is you cannot see a new worldview from the perspective of the old worldview because it's too limited. You can see the old worldview from the perspective of the more expansive infinite worldview,
mm-hmm.
which is the quantum worldview. Well, how do you do it? It's a shift. That's what a quantum leap is, just what you said.
Absolutely.
It's a shift in consciousness. It's a shift in state. Well, how do you do that? Strictly by intent. It's just the intent. And that's, of course, the purpose of my work is to say, okay, I have the intent. You make the shift, you learn the principles, and you start to live from them. And I always use the simple example. If you wanted to drive from Los Angeles to California, to San Francisco. Why do I use that? I don't know. I live in Florida. But it doesn't matter. You get the idea. I like this one better. Los Angeles, you want to know what it's like to live in New York. You can look at all, you can read about New York, you can eat a New York bagel, you can, listen to this song, a New York state of mind, but you don't know what it is to live there until you go there.
That's right.
So what you do is you go there in consciousness. You go there by virtue of your intent. And so instead of looking at the principles from your current limited or undifferentiated perspective framework. It's like, because we drift back and forth. If you're unaware of the distinction of these two systems of thinking that are shaping us, it's like sometimes your new world, sometimes your old world, but until we make this distinction, the idea of the distinction is to know the limits and the expansiveness of both. Why? So you can be at conscious choice.
Love it.
Otherwise, you're kind of at the effect of the circumstance, whatever happens to drift your way.
That's right.
So you make this, that's a quantum leap. As you said, Alexis, a shift with no pathway there. It's a shift in state.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to live and look from the principles. From New York, rather than looking at it from Los Angeles.
Oh, wow. Beautifully said. We are so in sync, I think, in our philosophy.
Definitely.
Diane, And I think the implications for, well, as we've said, we're living in a quantum reality already, but when our thinking can catch up to the frequency of a quantum way, imagine every, literally every dimension of life, including what we call business. I'm thinking of competition, which I don't really like the whole idea of competition, but it's going to change the whole face of everything that we do. Once we quantum think, there will be no need to catch up to win the race because there's another way of doing it. It will have implications for virtually everything that we do. I say we start by picking up the book, Do You Quantum Think? New thinking that will rock your world. Diane Collins, thank you for your wealth of knowledge. It's great. Thank you so much.
It's what we all know. I'm just reminding us with you. Thank you, Alexis. It's
Thanks
been
so
really,
much.
Really great.
The Wonderful. Pleasure has been mine. Thanks so much. Do You Quantum Think? Is an invitation to examine our old world thinking patterns and toss them out for a new world that is in front of us right now. It is Diane's heartfelt conviction that once we embrace the reality of a quantum way of living, we will no longer look to the outside world for validation of our own life and our own purpose, but we will instantaneously create from a perspective that is infinite and available to us at all times. To learn more about the work of Diane Collins, including where you can pick up a copy of her book, please visit dianecollins.com. That's Diane with two N's. Thank you for listening to this episode of Conscious Inquiry. Until next time, I'm Alexis Brooks.